Here at RNIB Connect Radio, we do talk about many ways in which you can get involved in the work of the RNIB and maybe also shape the future of the RNIB too. One way is through the regular Voice of the Customer focus groups. And I'm now joined here on Connect Radio by Ros Headley from the RNIB's Research and Insight team and Usher Mistry, who has recently taken part in one of the focus groups. Hello and welcome to Connect Radio, Usher and Ros.
Hi, Toby.
Hi, Toby.
Firstly, Ros, I know we've chatted before here on Connect Radio about the Voice of the Customer focus groups, but would you mind reminding listeners about the work that you do within the research programme and how the focus groups fits in with all this research?
Yeah, sure. So I gave a little bit of history on this on the last podcast and spoke about how this program of research emerged initially as a response to the pandemic. But essentially, it's part of our approach to put the voice of blind and partially sighted people right at the centre of what we do and help shape and direct our work on an ongoing basis. So every 3 months, we do a survey of around 400 people. We do monthly focus groups. And we also pay attention to what people are talking about on our social media channels. And through these three mechanisms, we're able to stay attuned to the issues that matter most to blind and partially sighted people and to respond in a timely and appropriate way.
Before we talk a bit more about the findings of the most recent research, I wanted to ask you, Usher, why you wanted to get involved with the Voice of the Customer focus groups and personally what you get out from taking part in these research and in the groups.
I enjoy participating in a variety of the RNIB campaigning activities. I joined in March 2020 and I wanted to understand my condition and how, with my experience, I can help others with their condition. So it's kind of a learning thing, just being in the group. So you get lots of opportunities and lots of activities that you can get involved, sharing, you know, sight loss journeys. And I think learning from my experience and learning from others has totally empowered me. So I thoroughly enjoyed making an inclusive society for all, and hence why I joined, to understand that.
Ros, what have you learnt from the most recent research and how does this directly help blind and partially sighted people?
So as with the last round of focus groups, we chose again this time to explore the eye care pathway or the sight loss pathway, which they're terms that are sometimes used to represent the journey that patients go through from initially experiencing eye problems to receiving appropriate diagnosis and support and care. We wanted to unpack this even more as it's such a fundamental thing to get right. So I just want to share three things that came out of the focus groups during this round of research. Number one, delays lead to preventable sight loss. So many focus group participants expressed frustration at the time that it took to see a specialist and be given their diagnosis. Some mentioned that during this period, their vision had deteriorated significantly. But we also learned that participants that received care in a community setting, for example, during the pandemic, they experienced firsthand how much quicker and easier it was to access support. So the community care approach has got the potential to lead to faster diagnosis and prevent that unnecessary sight loss. Secondly, we learned that professionals need sight loss awareness training. So many participants spoke about the bedside manner of professionals, sometimes leaving a lot to be desired. People spoke about lack of awareness amongst professionals of how an eye condition can affect a newly diagnosed patient. Some reported that they made flippant and even offensive remarks sometimes. And although there was a recognition that professionals are the best at what they do, generally there was a belief that medical staff should have visual awareness training to ensure that they deal with diagnosis sensitively, but also that they're continually signposting and explaining the services that are available, such as eye care liaison officers, ECLOs, which are universally accepted as beneficial. And we also know that support from rehab services is life-changing for the better, but it needs to be offered sooner. And finally, we also learned how understanding the CVI and registration process is really important. So registration of sight impairment should happen automatically and it shouldn't be left to individuals to process. And professionals need to ensure that they're explaining what registration is and how it can help a newly diagnosed person. Of course, you need a certificate of vision impairment in place first, and having one in place at the earliest opportunity allowed access to this much needed emotional and practical support.
Usher, what has been your own personal experience of the sight loss or eye care pathway?
I mean, it varied between departments to department based on my experience. Back when I was only 14 years old and I had left eye retinal detachment, I used to keep going to the GP at that time, and he thought I suffered from night blindness and kept giving me vitamin A tablets thinking that will cure it. But it wasn't later on when 3 months later I had the other eye retinal detachment and then I was totally blind. Because with one eyesight lost, you can still carry on. But with the other eye going, I think you're kind of left in a bit of a limbo. So my sister kind of ran me to the A&E eye hospital. And it was then that they operated one eye and then the second eye. But the fact that the detachment was left untreated for 3 months did have a huge impact on the amount of sight that was restored as a result of it. So I think GPs are not that experienced in terms of taking young people seriously with their eye condition and not kind of directing you straight to A&E. So that was a not so nice experience. And that was back in 1982. My recent eyesight experience was when, again, both eyes had a bit of a problem. So what happened was in my right eye, I had the epiretinal peel. And on my left eye, I had the cataract lens that was fitted all frosted up with some sort of protein that prevented me from, again, reading just with magnification, any emails and so on. So I was running from one hospital to the other. I knew the left eye could be easily sorted because I had that treatment with my right eye where they just blast a laser and remove the debris. So I was running from one London eye hospital to the other. So one of them did my one eye, the other one did the other one. But straightforward treatments like laser, which can be done within seconds, I just felt it should have been done straight away rather than when you get your other eye done, you know, get the consultant to look at that eye. I mean, it's kind of frustrating when you don't have vision in either of the eye at that point. So it wasn't very nice experience. So I just think hospitals, I know they're, you know, the increase in population and more people are kind of living longer, but life expectancy has gone up. But I just feel rather than having lots of appointments, if a treatment can be done there and then within seconds like this one was, I think it should be done rather than having several appointments. Because especially when you're working, you don't want to go off sick leave. You want to carry on being productive as long as possible. And it also helps with your, you know, independence at home as well and doing things. So, yeah, I've had nasty experience. I've also had good experiences. So it really depends which department, how busy they are, and which hospital resources they've been given. But that's been my experience. I mean, I've had 14 eye surgeries so far. I'm grateful that I have sight, even though it's limited. But it really depends which department you're in going to, because there are various clinics from retinal to vitreal to cataract and so on. So that's been my experience. So young people don't really get taken in seriously. And if they're very busy, they will fob you off to another year's, you know, another department, you know, another appointment and so on. And I've had also experience of where I've actually gone into the hospital, you know, got the bed and then they cancelled the surgery because they were overstretched as well. So, yeah, so you get yourself hyped up with this expectation that you'll get your surgery done on that day once you get the bed. And then you find out, no, it's not happening because they've had lots and lots of people to operate on, you know, in emergency and so on. So not being able to do it. So I do feel for them. But at the same time, it's not an nice experience from the patient's point of view as well.
Ross, what other mechanisms does the RNIB use to find out the concerns that blind and partially sighted people have? Because I think there are Facebook groups and other ways that you're able to gather research.
Yeah, and I'd also just like to say, yeah, you know, thanks to Usher for sharing those experiences. And, you know, you picked up on a lot of things that came through the focus groups, you know, the increase in demand, the long waits, cancellations, inconsistency across different hospitals and having to go to multiple sites. And a lot of this also points to, a lack of a sight loss pathway. There isn't a joined up, approach to this. And that's what we really need. But picking up on your question there, I also wanted to take this opportunity to explain a bit to listeners about another way that we stay plugged into what blind and partially sighted people are feeling. We've got a number of regional Facebook groups that people can join for peer support and advice. And by paying attention to what people are talking about, we can stay alive to the issues that matter to them. So it was actually through these groups that we first picked up during the pandemic that blind and partially sighted people were struggling to secure grocery slots. And we were able to use that insight and quickly work with retailers to secure priority delivery slots. But I just wanted to paint a brief picture of what we've learned during the period from January to March and some of the peaks and troughs in confidence and anxiety and the underlying factors. So in January, on the whole, people were feeling reasonably confident, still on a bit of a high from Christmas, as members of the groups had been able to meet friends and family. And for many, this had been the first and only chance to socialise in this setting since the pandemic. But we see this feeling levelled out a bit as the Christmas uplift wore off. And by February, we start to see a dip reflecting the underlying anxiousness as people faced a change in economic landscape. And then moving into March this year, the cost of living had become a dominant theme being discussed across our Facebook groups. Lots of anxiety being felt and expressed and worry for the future. And the sort of things coming up at the moment are people choosing lighting over heating. So for people with low vision, they may need lights during the day to do specific tasks or to help move around the home safely. And people are also highlighting the negative impact of wider cutbacks, longer waiting times for mobility training. Again, this relates to the discussion we're having on the eye care pathway and that need for early support. And also we're seeing a reduction of face-to-face social groups, which for many might be their only social contact. There are a number of things that R&IB are doing as a response to the cost of living crisis, which I can't cover all of them now, but we're going to be working with partners, calling on government to do more to help disabled people and feeding in those additional costs that people with sight loss tell us that they're facing. We've updated our money, benefits and finance web pages. And we're also going to be putting together a series of Connect Radio features on specific benefits which people might not be aware they're entitled to. We know that a lot of benefits go unclaimed. So, listen out for that series.
Well, that sounds all very interesting. And we are very much looking forward to listening out to that. Usher, why is it so important for blind and partially sighted people to get involved in the Voice of the Customer focus groups and other research that the R&IB does?
The reason why I would recommend others to get involved with the RNIB focus group is you get to meet great people and you get to work with different organisations to support inclusivity with their research, their website, their product design. I enjoy the flexibility of the group and you can get involved in opportunities alongside your other commitment. Like, for example, I work, I'm also a parent. There is no pressure on the level of participation and you can do as little as you want or be as proactive as you want. I would encourage other people to actually join the group for those reasons and just to make the world a better and inclusive society for everyone, because it's tough out there, because the world is built for those with sight and those with limited vision or no vision. It is a great barrier to overcome and we're getting there, but it's been a huge challenge just to make ourselves heard. So there are challenges to work, there are challenges with accessibility to education and challenges with transport access, product services, leisure, challenges to healthcare, as Ross talked about, challenges with society and government, whether it's voting. So we're getting there, but it's been a long, hard journey. So I think it's fantastic for those reasons. Definitely we recommend anyone with sight impairment to get involved and learn about themselves and also share their voices as well. So for that reason, definitely, Toby.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, Usher. Ross, finally, how do other blind and partially sighted people find out about the research that you do and get involved with the Voice of the Customer focus groups?
Yeah, so for the next round of research, we've got some questions coming up around public transport and getting out and about. So if your listeners want to get involved either in focus groups or the survey and help shape our work and direct where we focus our efforts, they can call our helpline on 0303 123 9999, or they can email the involvement team at customervoice@rnib.org.uk.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Ross Headley and Usha Mistry, for telling me more about the Voice of the Customer focus groups here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Toby. And thanks so much, Usha, for joining us today and generously sharing your personal experiences with us. It's really important. Thank you.
Thanks, Toby. Thanks, Ross, for the opportunity.